Okay, so I guess I'll get starting. This will be a short but quite general introduction to dose response analysis, and I will try to take you in two directions. I will talk a little bit about the models. So this is a statistical session. I will talk about the models. Why do we want to do dose response analysis? Why are so many people using it? And then I will be more specific about the R software towards the end, because that's where we have all of the applications. So I'll try to go in two directions. Well, maybe first, a very general definition of what is dose response. So the basic structure is that we have a dose, and I've tried to put up here a very general definition, and I don't even think I capture all of what's going on in real life still. So a dose, that's a certain amount of a biological, chemical, or radiation stress, and typically we will denote it like X. So it's an explanatory variable, it's a predictor. It has a unique feature which you should keep in mind, which is quite important for what we're doing. It is non-negative. And I will touch upon this a little bit later, but it's important to realize that the framework that we're talking about here is specific for an X variable which takes on zero or positive values. So if you are dealing with data with negative values, well, maybe it's not dose response analysis that you're doing. And of course, I'm talking about the original dose. I'm not talking about any transformation of the dose. And then once we have the dose, what do we get out of it? The response is then the reaction to the dose. And typically this will be a biological reaction in some test system, but it can be very many things, it seems, at the moment. Just to put it into picture, I think the R package that we'll talk about, DSC, has more than 500 citations. So there's really a lot of people using for all kinds of things. And it's not, I believe, not all of it biological systems. So there will be applications. I've heard about people using it when they are investigating speech. And I think there are many other applications, maybe not the bulk of applications, but I think it's very versatile. Anyway, we have a dose and we have a response, and the basic structure is that we have a number of doses typically, and then we will collect, measure the response. And it can be that we have doses which are like replicates, so we have multiple responses per dose, or it can be very different doses, and then we get the corresponding response values. How do we think about the response? Well, this is one of the features that I would like actually to stress, over the years we have somehow managed in using this R package, and I think this is a real unique feature that is not feasible in any other software, is that we can actually talk about dose response analysis for very many different types of response. So it could be a continuous response, which is the one we have most of the time, biomass, weight, whatever you measure on our continuous scale. It could also be something which is discrete, and discrete can be very many things. So it can be binary, dead, alive, present, absent, something is moving or it's not moving, whatever you can sort of put into two categories. Or it could be counts, counting the number of offspring, number of roots, number of leaves. So a kind of a counting process where you don't have a fixed upper limit as compared to the binomial case, binary case. And then it could, in principle, also be multinomial data where you have not one of two the categories, but you might have three or four categories. And then how do you do a dose response analysis for this? Well, that's where I put this as a teaser, because that's where we're still struggling to figuring out how to do that. But for the remaining part, it's working quite nice. And then finally, survival, event time. Typically, this is semi-parametric models, but there is kind of a tendency that people would prefer something which is easier to interpret, and we have some nice examples. These are from agriculture, from germination experiments, where we can actually fit dose response models to germination data, even though the data themselves, they are event time data. So kind of dose response analysis is a broad field in the sense that we cover very different types of response, but the models we use will be similar. So that's kind of where we get to the interesting thing, that we can have very different kinds of response outcome, but the models we use will be the same all over the place. So here I just try to perhaps give you an idea. There are, I don't know, 30, 40 models around when we talk dose response analysis in total. Some of them are not really used at all. Some are used all the time. And I think today we will use perhaps one class of models all the time. So we are really focusing on the one that's used the most. So, and that's the log logistic models. And I put kind of in gray. I hope you can barely see it because it's on purpose, because people sometimes talk about logistic models. Sometimes they actually mean log logistic models. Sometimes they mean something else. And if they mean something else, then they have a predictor, a explanatory variable, which is having negative values as well. So there's kind of a distinction between logistic and log logistic depending on application. For dose response analysis, it doesn't really make sense to have something which is a logistic model. And these are used all over the place, the log logistic models. So I guess 70-90% of all applications that we see, they are using these models. So they are really applicable in a lot of different settings. And maybe one of the reasons is that you can see here, as I put it, that some special cases that you get out of the log logistic model, that's the exponential decay model, and it's the Michaelis-Menten model. So that's simpler models, but they are still kind of part of the class of log logistic models. And then on top, we can extend the log logistic model so that they become even more versatile, and they will become very flexible, some of them. So you can actually capture any nonlinear trend that you may have. And of course, that's where we are at the limits of what dose response analysis can do for you. So if you have a pattern which is not S-shaped, sigmoidal, then maybe you're not in for dose response analysis. So that's kind of one limitation. I've seen a few applications where you have different patterns where it perhaps goes up and goes down again, and we can talk about hormesis and things like that, but essentially it's not for any kind of nonlinear regression modeling. It's for specific patterns. Although some of the models, they may be used also for other patterns. That's the flexibility of parametric models. So we also have like asymmetric models. There are two types of Weibull models. They are used not a lot. We have other monotonous models, so they will also pick up an S shape if we have such one in the data. So that will be the log normal models, which are very similar to the log logistic. Think of logistic regression, and what do we know about logistic regression? Yeah, we can have a logit link and we can have a probit link. And there are nice papers showing that unless you have thousands of observations, these two models will give exactly the same fit. And it's the same story here. There's indeed a close link to logistic regression. So the same story here, that the log normal and log logistic models, they will provide exactly, very close to exact same fit for data. But the parameters will, of course, be different because the models have different parameterizations. Then we have a fractional polynomial dose response models, which were suggested 7 years ago. A powerful collection of models which have not really been used a lot. And then we have threshold models, which is like a debatable issue. So that's, they pick up an S shape, but they assume that there is kind of a bent. So it's not a smooth S shape, but it's a transition which at some point simply changes direction. So it's like two linear regression models you have pasted together. And they're still on. It's still in, for instance, in ecotoxicology, an ongoing discussion whether models which have not a smooth transition from one part to another part of the response is really meaningful biologically. So they are available, but yeah, well, maybe not used that much. And then finally, we have the non-monotonous models, and that's where we really move out of the domain of dose response analysis, because they were originally invented for hormesis. So this is a feature where you have more than expected for really tiny doses, and then when you increase the dose, it becomes harmful. So you have the opposite effect of what you would expect, but only for really tiny doses. And this is not as active research area as it was 5-10 years ago, because people, they have had a hard time actually reproducing these results. And the models that we have for hormesis, they are extremely flexible, so they can pick up any trend you have in the data. So they prove to be perhaps too flexible for this type of data in the end. So much about parametric models. So let's get back to the one that we'll talk about all day, at least until 1 o'clock. So this is the log logistic model, and here I put up the equation. We will not have many equations, so this is one of a few. This is the classic, I would say, four-parameter log logistic model. You can see what are the parameters. Yeah, it's B, C, D, E. So let me explain. The C is denoting the lower limit, lower asymptote of the S shape. So that's the plateau it will reach. Eventually, if it's a decreasing dose-response relationship, or it will be the level it had initially if it's an increasing one. And then the D is the upper limit, which we typically, if it's a decreasing dose-response relationship, will think of as the control level. So D is control, dose zero. What is the level on average? And then the B is kind of the governing the slope, the speed of change over the dose range. So the larger the B will be in absolute value, the more rapidly the transition will be from a high response level to a low response level, or the other way around. So it will mean that the S shape becomes pretty close to being something which is just flat and then goes down really rapidly in a vertical way and then becomes flat again. So there is no gradual transition, unless B is really close to 1, 2. If it's 10 or 20, it's a rapid change. And then finally, perhaps the most interesting parameter, at least the one that's reported most of the time when you do dose response analysis, the parameter E, which is EC, ED, IC, 50. So that's the one that will tell where we have 50% reduction between the upper limit and the lower limit. Yeah, questions? Yes, so the question is if I relate this to the Emacs model, and I think terminology is also not very precise for the Emacs. If we talk about what some authors have termed the sigmoidal Emacs, that's a log logistic model. So that's the same model in a slightly different parameterization. The Emacs model itself could be the Michaelis-Menten model, so that's a simpler model. But it's still kind of a sub-model of the log logistic model. So Emacs models, to me, that's just special cases of log logistic models. Depending on who's using it, they might be with more or less parameters. That terminology is not crystal clear. Yeah. Another question? Thanks. So I can jump back to the previous slide in a moment. So this is kind of how it looks if it's a decreasing dose response relationship. So you can see the parameter D, that's for dose zero. So that's the level for the control. That's when we don't expose the organism to anything. That's when we don't actually have any exposure or dose. And then you can see there's a decrease. And when the decrease is halfway between D and C, which is the lower limit, that's where we have the dose E, EC50, ED50, IC50, depending on the application. And that will be halfway between the upper limit asymptote and the lower limit asymptote. And then the kind of the steepness of the curve exactly for dose equal E, that will be proportional to the parameter B. So in this case, it's, I don't know, I think this is roughly a B of 2. I mean, B is, I mean, once you've done a few analyses, you'll realize that B is hardly varying between beyond an interval from 1 to 20. So it's a pretty narrow scale for B. And this is, yeah, well, it's not the most rapid change from the upper limit to the lower limit that you could imagine, but alleviate, it's not a really flat curve. Getting back here, so why does everybody want to use the log logistic model? That's because it has been shown over, that's beyond my horizon, but I think over 40, 50 years that it's suitable for really a lot of applications. So it has an empirical base. there's very little mechanistic theoretical kind of arguments why a log logistic model is the best. And I think we are still in a state where the data sets we have, they can't disprove that it's the right model. So I would expect that once we perhaps have data sets with more doses, more than 10, 20, but maybe really a lot, then we will have dose response relationships, which will not really be fitted well by the log logistic models. But I think these types of data sets, they are not still not around very often, at least. The parameters, as you might all have by now recognized, they have a biological interpretation. So I know exactly what D means, upper limit, C, lower limit. I know the B is the slope, how rapid the transition is, and E is where we are halfway between the upper and lower limit. So the model provides nice direct biological interpretation. I think this is nowadays not as interesting and compelling an argument as it was some years, perhaps 10, 20 years ago. And I'll get back to why so a bit later today. So it's used, I've just put in a few areas, biology, hearing science, medicine, pharmacology, all kinds of toxicology as well. So this could be human or ecotoxicology. And then the thing that I promised you, if I take my equation and then I put D equal 1 and C equal 0, then actually I will recover, given my response is a binary response, I will recover a log logistic logistic regression model. So actually the log logistic model is closely linked to the logistic regression in case of a binary binomial response. So in a sense, you might see what we will be showing today as an extension of a standard logistic regression to a different context. So this is quite interesting that we have this link. Yeah, well, what do we use them for, these dose response models? It depends on your data, kind of. So how many dose response curves do you have? Do you have a single one? Okay, data for a single one. Yeah, well, then we can fit the curve. You will see that this is as easy nowadays as fitting a linear regression. So fitting a dose response model, this is a blink of an eye operation, just like fitting a linear regression. And this is something which has really changed, at least in my opinion, a lot of the data analysis around dose response analysis, because this wasn't possible 10 years ago. And in some other software packages, it's not as smooth as it is with R. So you can fit a single curve, and what can we get out of it? Yeah, well, I think the key parameter is still what I put here, the E, which will sort of tell where we are halfway between the upper and lower limits. And most of the time you will see that people, they have data. So I didn't put in the data points here. You will see a lot of data later on this morning, so the data will come. But if you have a lot of data, then of course your interest, if you have a data for one dose response curve, is to make a summary of your data. And it tends to be like agreed that the way to summarize dose response data is by picking one parameter. And that would then be the parameter E, which will tell part of the story about the data. It will tell where we are halfway between the upper and lower limit. And these E parameters could then be compared between different curves if you want to. So that would be kind of the next setting. If you have multiple curves, what do you then want to do? Yeah, well, then in the context of toxicology, or then you would perhaps compare your E parameters for the different curves. It could be a ratio. Then in some areas, some fields, you will talk about a relative potency. How much more powerful is one substance chemical compared to another one, in the sense that how much is E larger for one substance or chemical than the other one? So that would be kind of a relative statement that you can claim it's so many percent better than another one. You can also compare the entire curves. Maybe you have a hypothesis about two dose response curves and they should be the same. We can test if two curves are the same way as we would test if two groups are the same in a typical one-way analysis of variance. So what you can do more or less in a linear model setting, we can do also here. So we can use tests to compare two curves. And comparing two curves is not like, it involves assuming that all parameters in the two curves, they will be the same. So it's not comparing two parameters, but two curves, and that will involve comparing three or four or five parameters. And this we can achieve in one go. So that could be carried out depending on your response type, either using an F-test or approximate chi-square test. Or more interestingly, you would be interested in comparing specific parameters. It could be the E parameter, as I already said, in a ratio, but it could also be you would like to subtract. You would see in absolute terms how much is the dose improved or reduced for one chemical, one dose compared to another one. And then you would ask for the difference between two E parameters. So that would be one option. And in principle, you could ask any question that is related to the parameters. And just remember, we have in this model four parameters. You could ask if you have two dose response curves, are the D parameters the same? Are the upper limit the same? Are the lower limit the same? Are the slopes the same? I mean, I think I've by now seen all these questions being asked. So it really depends on what you're looking for when you do the analysis. Having said this, sometimes it's the case that you have multiple curves, and then maybe I'm a little bit tough here, but then I would say that biology already dictates whether some of the parameters should be the same. So we will see later on, we will have examples where we don't assume that all parameters are different for all curves. So there's also kind of a strong element of common sense or that you somehow need to incorporate what you know about the experiment. And I think in a lot of cases, you will do repeat experiments, same lab, same everything, same device, and of course it will have some consequences for your data. And ideally, we don't want the data to tell us what are the consequences, because you know and should know that in advance. But I think we can pick up on this idea a little bit later when we have the real data. So getting back now into R, so what are the kind of resources that would be around if we kind of, and this is not a complete or updated list, I've given up preparing such one, but you can find bits and pieces for doing dose response analysis in a lot of different packages. So you can, in principle, fit a dose response model for continuous response using NLS, part of the standard R installation. I don't think anybody's doing this anymore. Partly because you can use something which is better, but also because NLS is not very stable and you have to struggle a lot actually to get a good fit. There are some improvements, some packages around that might help when you really struggle with NLS, the function NLS. So that's the package NLS2 and the package NLS tools. And there's also some functionality in MAS. What else? Yeah, well, then there is DRC, which we will be talking about today, which is kind of, I'm a author of the package, of course, so I'm biased, but I think it offers a lot of features which we don't have anywhere else. And I will also, towards the end today, talk about one of the two extension packages, which is the MEDRC, which is the mixed effects dose response analysis, which is a recent package which has proven to be extremely powerful. And then there you can find a number of packages which have elements of dose response analysis. So I have found the CALID, the DRFIT, the GrowFIT, the QPCR, and the PK package. And I think there will for sure be some more packages around. But kind of my problem with these packages is they can perhaps fit one model in one way, and that's it. And the different packages will not allow data to be in the same format. So you will also need to import data in different formats for using these packages. So that's one reason that I've never used them actually. So back to talking about DRC. Yeah, maybe before I will say more about the content, maybe the history. So it all started in 2005. Some researcher contacted me. They wanted to do dose response analysis. They at that time, they used SAS. That sounds a long time ago. It was as well. And it was not really easy using SAS for these analysis. One of the reasons was that when you deal with nonlinear regression, it's in a sense, very different from a linear regression, because a linear regression, that's simply you supply the data, you press the button, you get the slope and the intercept. That's very convenient. Even Excel can figure this one out. Nonlinear regression is not the same. You can provide the data. You need to specify what is the nonlinear function you are interested in. So here already there's more choices. And then on top, you need often in software to provide the starting values. So you need to have a good idea about what are actually the parameters, what are the value of the parameters that you are looking for. So in the good old days, you had to supply the data, the nonlinear model function, and also some starting values to make sure that the estimation at all succeeded. And that was, that was sometimes a pretty hard task to figure out what were these starting values. And so that's when it all began, because I thought maybe we could use the power in the programming part of R to actually use the data to generate starting values without having the user doing so. And that's how it started. And that's then what has kind of, in my opinion, changed how we can do dose response analysis, because nowadays I hardly care about starting values. And hopefully you are mostly ignorant about the problem, because it was a problem 10 years ago. It's not a problem anymore. And in my last example today, you'll see that we need starting values. But for the rest of the analysis today, starting values, what's that? You not even notice that they are needed, because it will be done automatically. So that had really, in my opinion, changed the landscape for nonlinear regression and dose response analysis in general. So we can do a lot of things in a much more convenient way. So actually that was my first bullet. So estimation is in most cases as smooth as using LM. So you will hardly notice the difference. So you, in particular, no need to think about starting values. This is more today. When I said this 10 years ago, people would appreciate it. Today it's something, starting values, most people, they puzzle what I actually mean by this one. And you need to go back into the literature to see there's been a lot of discussion about how to select starting values and how to make sure that you actually end up with a good fit. And this is something we hardly ever discuss nowadays. The tiny type of response, as I said initially, need not be quantitative. So we can deal with continuous data, binary, binomial, count data, event time data, and some other types of data, but we're still struggling to get that one right. We can specify the models in a very convenient way, because there are a lot of built-in functions coming with the package, so you need actually not know the equation for a log logistic model. You just need to know what is the kind of shortcut that you should provide for the fitting function so that it will fit a log logistic model. So this about specifying equations, nonlinear equation, this is also long gone, unless you have a really specific model which is not part of DSE, then you might have to specify the equation in an R function. But otherwise it's all built in. The nice thing is that you have the freedom to fix any of the values. So let's say you have an experiment and you're pretty sure that the control is 100%. Could be that you kind of normalized your control or your data, so the control is 100%. That might not be a good idea for other purposes, but imagine you had data where your response is on average 100 for dose zero. Then you would ideally introduce that information into your model. So you would actually not fit the model to the values which are close to 100, but you would tell the model function that you actually know that the upper limit should be 100, but because you did that. So that's one example where actually what you did to the data is something that we should incorporate in the model function. And we have the freedom in DSE that we can specify any fixed value for any of the parameters. So if you know the upper limit is 100, we tell it. If you know that the slope should be 2, which is not often the case, then we can specify it should be 2. Or if you know that, maybe in most common example, that the lower limit is 0, because it's kind of, okay, your dose is for some chemical, and the more you treat the organism with the chemical, the less there will be of the organism, then perhaps eventually at some point, for a very large dose, we will have nothing left. So then the lower limit should be 0. This would also be nice that if you know this is how your experiment works, that you then tell R when you fit the data, when you fit the model to the data, that actually you know what the lower limit will be, so that it will not struggle to figure that one out. We will have examples later on. So we have all standard R methods. You can ask for confidence intervals, you can ask for summary, you can ask for a plot, you can ask for residuals, fitted values, whatever you can imagine doing for a linear model, you can do the same for dose response model once it's fitted. You can plot in a very convenient way. And I think what you will see today is, yeah, well, traditional graphics. So perhaps these could be sneaked into publications in some cases, but ideally I think we are in a phase where plotting functionality is shifting towards using ggplot2. So you can prepare your data, your model fit, and then use ggplot2. So I think in the future, maybe the plotting will happen somewhere else, but at least we can visualize the model fits we have in a very nice way. We can estimate ED50, but we can also estimate ED10, 5, 20, whatever you like, without reparameterization. So that's the nice thing, that we can estimate, in principle, any ED, EC value you should be interested in. And if you have multiple curves, we can also take the ratios of these EC values. And this is an operation which takes a blink of an eye again, because we don't reparameterize. We simply have one model, and then we can from that extract all the ED values we're interested in. So this is one thing which is also different from what you still may find papers claiming, that if you need ED10 or ED5, then you need to reparameterize your model. And every time you will see in the papers, there's a new equation because it's a new parameterization of the same model. The only thing that people see tend not to mention is that having a model where EC5 or 10 is actually a model parameter makes it extremely hard to fit to the data, because, yeah, well, you don't typically have a lot of data to sustain ED5 or 10 because it's in one of the tails. So it's in principle a bad idea to reparameterize, say, so that you have parameters that are that need to be based on very few of your data points. It's an ongoing exercise in some journals still. And then finally, which will be the last thing I hope to show you today, is that we can extend the entire framework to mixed effects, which we, for the continuous response case. And we have some ideas how to do it for other types of response as well. For continuous response, we have the entire collection of model functions that are available in DSC. You can use them in ME-DSC as well. If you have a more complex design with multiple curves, and perhaps they were recorded, measured on different days, so you have day-to-day variation, things like that, you want to have it into one big analysis, this is now possible. And you can still get the same quantities out. You can estimate EC5, EC10, also for a complex hierarchical dose response design, which I think is really nice, and which is something that we didn't expect would happen, but it somehow it worked out, the programming part. And this is a package which is currently only on GitHub, so this is not one we can pull from CRAN. But yeah, well, I have an example later on this one. Well, I think that was just a broad overview of dose response analysis and how we can do it in R. If no further questions, then I think I will give the word to Sien, who will start with some of the concrete examples so you can see actually how it works. And we will have a lot of examples.
Yes. So I'll turn to our studio, which I will use from now on and at least until the coffee break. So let's start with an example from Weed Science. Or first of all, actually, I would like, if you would like to type with me, that would be really nice. Also, and if you have small problems with the running the code, or it seems to be small problems, maybe you can raise a hand and Christian will help you. And if it's larger problems or can I do this instead or anything, then I'll try to take it from here. So first of all, we need the package. I'll try. I just don't remember how to. Sorry. Thank you. Big enough, bigger? That's white, sorry. Yeah, the font size should be 14. Yeah, but what's the... Yeah, det ved jeg ikke. No idea.
Men det er jo meget fint. Ja.
Yeah. Okay. Better? Okay, let's try to see. Okay, so my first example is from Weed Science. It's a dataset called Ryegrass, and it's... I hope you can see. And it's... It's a perennial ryegrass that is exposed to different levels of a herbicide, and then the length of the roots are measured. So we have continuous data here. So let's start to have a look at the data set. This data set is built into the package DRC, so it's just writing ryegrass. So as you can see here, we have the root length and we have concentrations. So here we have repetitions. So here you can only see for the concentration zero, we had a lot of measurements for the root length. So let's start just with a simple plot of data. If we plot, root length as a function of concentration, and it's from the data. Okay, so this is how data looks like. And this is for the concentration on the original scale. If we change the, try plotting it again, but this time with the concentrations on a log scale. We can do that by adding this log equals to S, X. You will see that we get this S shape that Christian was talking about. So did Yes, I don't know if everybody heard that, but yeah, the concentration zero measurements disappeared here because we took the log. So the log of zero is not possible to show. So let's try fitting a model. So I will call this ryegrass and I will call it LL4 because I will fit a log logistic four parameter model to these data. So I will use the function DRM. I will tell it to have root length as a function of concentration. I will of course again tell the data set. And then I will need to tell which kind of function to fit to these data. So I will choose the LL4, write it in this way. So by writing this, I will first of all tell which shape the curve should have that I should fit to the data, but I will also provide in the background the starting values, because these are built in with this one. Yes. So now, if we want to see our fit, I will plot the fitted model. LL4 is the four-parameter log logistic model. So simply writing plot ryegrass, our model fit, we will get a plot of our model fit. And here, first of all, actually it doesn't really make sense down here because we have some problem with the zero and the one. So maybe we should add the broken equals to true. Just show you here. Oh, sorry. So now it makes more sense. So now we can add this broken equals to true because then we will break the x-axis, meaning that we can have everything within the same plot here. So we will be able to see these zero concentrations as well. The same plot, even though we are having log transform the concentrations. So in this plot, we only saw kind of the mean values for each concentration. If we also wanted to see all our data points, we can do that as well. By adding type equals to all. So now we get to see all our data. Instead we have a, it seems that the model fits the data quite well. It describes the relation between the concentration and the root length in a nice way. So we fitted a model to our data, so of course we need to do some model checking to see whether this is a nice, we can actually use our model. So as Christian said, we can use the regular functions with the fitted and the residuals. So let's plot that. So that should be the fitted function. So let's have a look at that. So we can see that our residuals, they kind of distribute equally around the zero. So meaning again, we have a nice fit to the curve. It seems to be the right choice for these data. But we also see that there's a lot more variation in the middle part here. And this is around, maybe we can go back in a minute, but this is around the ED50 value. So there's a lot more variation going on here than on the rest of the curve. We can also try to make a QQ plot. And it seems everything lying on a nice straight line, so our requirement of the normal distribution is, seems to be okay. So now, now that we validated our model fit, let's have a look at the output by using the summary. Just try to notch this a bit. So from the summary, we first of all, we just got get told which model we used for our data. So this was the log logistic with the four parameters. And down here we have the four parameters that Christian told you about before. So we have a lower limit that is estimated to around 0.5. We have an upper limit that is estimated to around 7.8. Then we have the ED50, which is located around 3. And we have this the B parameter, which was again proportional to the slope, which was around the 2 point or around the 3 down here. We also get the standard errors and T value and a test for each of these parameters being 0, which is maybe not the most interesting part of this, but they are here. If we are rather interested in the confidence intervals than the standard errors, we can use the confidence function. Which will, yeah, give us all of these, the confidence intervals for all of the parameters. We can also plot with confidence bands. And again, this is the kind of the simple plotting functionality. Everything could also be subtrated and plotted with the ggplot2. Yes? The intercept. Oh. I guess it's just the way it's coded because all of but here I only have one curve here. So it will change if we have several curves. Then it will be compared to these to this intercept. So then we will, if we have several curves, we will consider each parameter as an ANOVA in itself. We can do that. And then we will have an intercept and we will compare things to that. So plotting with confidence intervals. We will add the type equals to confidence. And then we will get these nice bands on the curve instead. Yes, Christian's writing. Yeah, it's pointwise. Excuse me? Yeah, that's a really good question. Christian. Let's try. The warnings that I had, why they were there, and no, it was not because of broken equals to true. You don't get. Maybe it's a version problem. Thank you. So this was a four-parameter model. So let's say we had an idea that actually the lower limit here should be zero. If we do that, then we shouldn't estimate the lower limit. We should rather specify that it should be zero before estimating the model. So let's fit a new model. And I will call this ryegrass.ll3 because this will be a three-parameter logistic model. I will use the function DRM again. And now I will tell this that this function should be this logistic three-parameter model. And I can do this because already in this in DRC, the LL3 model is specified as the model with the lower limit equal to zero. You can also, I will show later in another example, specify the value of parameters yourself, but this one is already pre-specified. So let's just have a summary of that. So now that we didn't estimate the C parameter, it's out of our summary for the model fit. If we're interested in the, so from here, we already get the ED 50. If we're interested in other ED values, we can use the function ED. I'll probably just go back to the four-parameter model. And then I specify a vector of the values that I'm interested in. So I'll let me have the ED 10, the ED 20, and the ED 50. So I don't know if you recall, but from the summary we had for the four-parameter model, we also had this ED50. The E parameter here was also the 3.5. So this is the exact same number as from the model fit. But now we also get the ED10 and the ED20, and we get these with standard errors. If we're interested in confidence intervals, we can also get these. By adding interval equals to delta. And delta is here because we're using the delta method to get these confidence intervals. So they will be given to us here. When we looked at our model, we had some slight model misspecification. So a nice way to deal with this could be by having Sabbitt's variance estimators instead. And we can get them if we get a little help from two other packages. That will be the LM test. And the sandwich. So let's just start with the uses COEF test. And we can write the ryegrass. Yeah, so just doing this, we get the exact same estimates that we had before. Oh, sorry. So if we want these sandwich variance estimates, we can add something to the COEF test function. V, covariance under dots, equals to the sandwich. And I'll just show the same. So if you recall from the, when we looked at our model fit and the residual plots, we saw that in the middle of the range, which was around the ED50, there was a large variation, which means that when we do this, the simple analysis, we kind of assume that all standard errors, that the variation is the same, although we assume variance homogeneity. So that means that it will kind of make an average. So it was too big here. So now that we'd have the SAMIT variance estimate, we will get a larger standard error here on the ED50 parameter, which is in this particular area where the variation was too big. On the other hand, with the lower and the upper limit, we get some smaller standard errors now, because before they were kind of averaged up to get the overall average, so now we can get some smaller standard errors by using these sandwich variance estimates. Yes? Yeah, sorry. Just go back down here. Oh, no, okay, of course, that one. So maybe you can see it here, there was a big variation here in the middle, which is also around the ED50. But the variation, let's have a bigger one. But the variation down here was smaller. Okay, it's also a bit larger here, but not as big as in the middle. So this was an example with some continuous data. So now I will show you something with binomial data. Yes, you can use the prediction function, and then you can actually take out the data in a data frame and add it and use it with ggplot2. The code is a bit more tricky, so maybe I can add an example and send out with the slides or the code afterwards here. So if we go to the binomial data, we have also in the package a data set, a small data set, which is quite old. It's from Finney and it's from 71. So let's just have a look at that data set. So in this data set, they had these, for different doses, these total amounts of insects were exposed to a pesticide, and then it was counted how many of them that were affected by the pesticide. So we have some summary data here. We don't have information on each individual insect, but that's not a problem. So let's try to fit a model to these data. So again, we use the DRM function. Now we specified that it's the affected divided by the total that we're interested in. Oh. Again, say that till the data set. We specify the function, which should be, let's have an two-parameter logistic model here. And then very importantly, we need to tell that the weight should equals to the total. And we do that to tell that we have, within each of these rows, we have, there is more than one observation. So that's the total number of observations that is specified here. Oh. What is wrong? Oh, thank you. Good. You already got it? Now it works. Good. Oh, sorry. So let's have a look at this model fit. So now we have a S shape that kind of turns the other way around. So for larger doses, more of the insects are affected. When we have this two-parameter log logistic model, we assume that the lower bound is zero and the upper bound is one. So, yeah. Yes, let's do that. Actually, I will do a bit more. Maybe we should also add the Brogan to this. And let's see here. It doesn't really help. So now you can see it. If for some reason you want to change this breakpoint, that's also possible. And we can do that by specifying where we want it. So let's add this to be 0.1 just to see how that looks. So that didn't really change much, so maybe that was actually okay. Let's just try to change it. For instance, like that. So you will, of course, change it so that your data looks the nicest in there, so you can see all of your curve. So let's have a look at the fit. So again, here we get the ED50 value, which is just around a dose of 5. So that is when we have a dose of 5, 50% of our insects that is exposed will be affected. We also have the slope, which is proportional, the B parameter, which is proportional to the slope in this ED50. Again, let's have a look at some other ED values. Maybe also the 90. And let's just have some confidence intervals. Easy. So in this example, we don't really have that much data around the upper limit. So maybe we actually don't know that all of the flies will, all the insects will die. So if we instead want to fit a model that is estimating the upper limit, we can do that with the LL3, the three parameter model. Thank you. Good point. Actually, I'll just go back. So this is very nice that I showed you this one, but it's also a wrong model, but because I didn't tell the dose the function that this was binomial data, and of course we need to do that. So I'll just change this one. Not all the time. Let's just have a look at that. So we can also see here that the standard errors, so maybe we can see that here. Now we got different standard errors. So here we we can't see that from this one. So let's just say that now I actually did it the right base way, but let's try to fit a three parameter model instead, just to see if the upper limit is actually one. So this time we choose LL3. We remember the weight. And I'll try to remember to type binomial. Why I choose the logistic model? The number of parameters I will choose out of my beforehand knowledge. So if I kind of know that for large enough doses, all of my insects will die because this is a really toxic insecticide that I add to them, then I will have the upper limit to be one, because I know everyone will be affected. And in the same way, I know that nobody maybe will be affected with a low, really low dose or no dose at all, so then I will have the one. If I had no prior knowledge at all, I would probably have started out with a four parameter model. Well, there's a chance of overfitting sometime if you don't have too many doses. And I would say if you have any biological knowledge about your data or from the literature, you should always try to incorporate that.
Thank you.
I can just show you. Yes, so good. So just as Christian said, the price that we pay here by adding a parameter is also larger standard errors for the parameters that we already added. So quite a lot, almost doubled the standard errors.
Sorry,
yes? Yes?
So you're choosing the number of parameters by specifying the function.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, yes, it does in here, because Christian kind of specified that if we have a four parameter, then we have all of them. If it's the three parameter, then we set the lower limit to zero. If it's a two, then we also set the upper limit to one. But we can also specify it ourselves if we, as Christian said, kind of wanted to say that if we knew what the ED50 value was or something else. And I will actually show you that now. So let's just have a look at it's another binomial data set. And it's also included in the packets, and it's called Earthworms. So this is an example from toxicology, and if you imagine two boxes being built together, in one of the boxes there's added some kind of a, it could be an insecticide or some toxic thing. In the other one, the earth is clean. And then you put 10 earthworms on top of this, and they will go down, and then after lot of time, they are free to move between the two boxes. And then after a time, you will count how many earthworms are in the toxic one. So if there's a lot of toxicity, they should move to the clean earth, and if it's not a problem for them, they will stay. So this is the data set. We have doses, we also have replications here. We have the total number, so that's a total number of earthworms put on top, and then we have the number here, which is the number of earthworms that is left after some time in the affected one. So if we try to fit a model to this, so this will again be the number divided by total. Sorry. Add the weights equal to the total. sorry, binomial, and then we should add a function. But could I, excuse me, the... My, like this, oh, maybe I just can't hear what you're saying. Oh yeah, sorry, thank you. Add a new line so that we can see here. So the function will be an LL3. I can do that. Yes, now I just made an LL4, so I just change the name, I run it, and now let's start plotting that to see the fit. So if we have a closer look here, we are, so all of our parameters are estimated. We have a lower limit here that doesn't seem to be exactly zero. We have an upper limit around 0.5, which also makes quite sense. I mean, you should guess from before that just by chance adding adding earthworms on top of this, and actually if there is no toxicity in the toxic box, then they should distribute half-half. So if I want to add this knowledge, I can do that. So now this I will call an LL3, but this particular model is not pre-specified with the parameter, the upper limit being a half. So we need this one, we need to specify ourselves. So this is not part of DRC. So now we have to do the work ourselves. So we can do that. Start here. And this is how we're doing it. So now we say, well, actually want to use the LL4, but within the LL4, we need to fix some of the parameters. Do that by specifying a vector, and then we say, well, the first parameter in the alphabetic order is the B parameter that we want the model to estimate, so we put an NA. The second one, the lower limit, we also want the model to estimate. But then the third parameter, the D parameter, that should be 0.5. And then the E parameter should also be estimated. So we can do that, and let's just see if it works. So it changed a bit. I don't know if you see it, saw it actually. It moved just a bit up here. So if we have a look at our fatal models, So the four parameter had these estimates, and you also see the D parameter is actually quite close to the 0.5. So now we don't get an estimate of the D parameter down here because we told ourselves. But again, because we specify some of the parameters, we use our prior knowledge, we get some smaller standard errors on our on the parameters that we have left. So we get some more strength in our analysis. So any of the parameters can be specified here, also more than one at a time. So actually, and we could also, I could have done this by going from the 2 to a 3 parameter, or the 3 to a 2 parameter logistic model. I could just have said anything. It's just easier to use the ones that were already specified within DRC. Yeah, you can specify it before you're thinking, or no, I think you actually need to specify the NAs.
So yeah,
you have to do that. It needs to know that these are not specified. I think there's only 5 minutes to coffee break, so maybe I will just ask you just to be able to distribute the slides. If you can send an email to this mail, we will send around the slides, both the ones that Christian used before. I will also later send the coding, the R code, and then you will also receive a data set that we will use after the break.